Hello everyone, this is Tom with another Open Country Audio Walk. You join me on a very blustery day today. The thing that's concerning me the most is that the start point where we're currently standing now is probably the most sheltered and lowest part of the route today. So it can only get breezier as we carry on. However, I don't think that's going to detract from the drama and beauty of the walk today. In fact, I think it will even add to the atmosphere as we go in search of hidden industry in Nidderdale National Landscape. Nidderdale National Landscape is a beautiful area of North Yorkshire that sits in between the Yorkshire Dales National Park and the Vale of York. From its rolling and bleak moorland at the top of the dale to the rural farmland and beautiful woodland areas that flank the sides of the valley, it really has something for everybody. And I'm really looking forward to exploring a more industrial side of it today. So I suppose it's time to hold on to your hats as we brave the windy conditions and explore Toftgate Limekiln and the Coldstones Cut. Our walk today is taking us over Greenhow Hill or Greenhow Moor, and I'm beginning to realise why it's so windy today, as this area is really exposed. It's one of the highest points in the area, so if there is any wind to be had, it's going to be whistling through at a rate of knots, as I'm already starting to discover. But because of its location, we should get some absolutely spectacular views today across the valley below and the surrounding moorland. But before we venture even further uphill, we're just going to pay a little visit to Toftgate Limekiln. Ah, that's better. I've found a sheltered corner from the wind behind one of the towering stone walls of the limekiln. Although it's abandoned and in ruin today, there's still quite a substantial structure here, as we'll discover as we wander round. The kiln itself was built in the 1860s, and it was used to extract lime from the abundance of limestone that sits across this area of the country. They used to use it to burn the limestone to extract the precious lime that sits within it, which was used for two reasons. Firstly, as a product that goes into mortar, which was used to build the buildings of the industrial nearby cities of Leeds and Bradford. And also by the rural community, because lime is extremely fertile, so they used to spread it on the land to aid the growth of the abundance of farmland that sits around us. I find it quite ironic that this lime kiln is actually built out of limestone itself. As I said, it sits on a huge plain of limestone that covers the whole of the Yorkshire Dales. So I suppose it was the most obvious thing to build it with. The thing that I find fascinating about limestone is it's a sedimentary rock, which means that it was built up over billions of years, actually at the bottom of the sea. So as I look closely at the stones that are making up this wall behind me, I can see little fossils of sea creatures that have been frozen for all time and solidified in the rock. It really is utterly mind-blowing. I've headed down into the centre of the lime kiln now and managed to find another reasonably sheltered spot. I'm in a chamber that's been hewn out of the rock, and as I look up, all I can see is walls of limestone surrounding me. Just to the right, there's a large archway made out of the stone. And above that, all I can see are the clouds whipping across the blue sky, with the sun intermittently coming out and going back in again as the clouds obscure it and then reveal it again as they zip by. You can tell how many years this kiln has been here, because underneath the stone archway there are stalactites hanging down, which is where drips of water have come off the eroding sedimentary stone and have reformed again in little droplets made out of rock. You often see things like that in caves, and where I'm standing now is very reminiscent of a cave, even though I can see the sky above me. It's also interesting to see how nature is reclaiming this site since its abandonment. There's lots of grass growing in amongst the stones, and dandelions providing little pockmarks of yellow as you look up through the limestone cavern. You often get the ominous cry of a jackdaw as well, emanating through the air, which makes this place even more atmospheric. As much as I'm enjoying the shelter of my cave-like surroundings, I'm just going to venture back out into the breeze and a bit further up to the right, where it looks like there's the remains of a well-like structure. There it is, just below us now. It does go down quite far, but I don't think this was a well. I think this is where they used to place the limestone to be burnt, and then all of the fumes would head up the flue behind us, which has since been bricked up at this end, but we'll see it a little bit further along on our walk. I can only imagine what it would have been like to work in an environment like this. Hot, filthy, and really quite uncomfortable, I imagine. I've made my way back out into the breezy weather, and I'm following the flue back up the hill towards the wall that I was sheltering under earlier on. It's like a tunnel structure. It's built with the stone walls at either side and massive limestone plinths coping the top of it. There's a little bit here where the wall has disintegrated ever so slightly, and it's giving me a good opportunity to have a look in. At one end you can see the top of the chamber where I was a little while ago. And then the other way, if I just make my way over this big limestone chunk that has fallen from the ceiling, you can actually walk through this tunnel structure. It really is incredible. A, the amount of work that has gone into making this place. It just goes to show the longevity of it, that being built in the 1860s, it's still around today. As I'm walking through this tunnel, I've just come across what looks like the remains of a bird's nest on my right-hand side. As we walk today, you may hear the sounds of curlew, oyster catchers, and other moorland and wading bird specialists that will often make this place their home, because it's perfectly sheltered away from that breeze, and it's away from prying human eyes. Well, unless you're me recording an audio walk, but I don't come through here that often, as I'm sure the birds are very pleased about. I'm going to see how far I can make my way up this tunnel. I don't want any of these limestone plinths to come crashing down on my head, but at the same time, every little step I take is more and more intriguing to see what's a little bit further on. Well, I realised that I couldn't really get much further, so I've turned round and come back out, but an absolutely fascinating piece of history that is still here today for us to explore and just imagine what it would have been like to see this place at the height of its power, when the furnaces were at full pelt and the lime was being smelted. I imagine the smells would have been quite impressive, filling the nostrils. Today, those industrial smells have been well and truly replaced by the distinctive smell of sheep. Anyway, I've thoroughly enjoyed my visit to Toftgate Limekiln, but this is only the start of the walk. We're now going to head up the blustery hill towards the Coalstones Cut and Coalstones Quarry. We've just passed through a gate, and at the other side of it, the landscape has changed quite dramatically from where we were before. As I said, surrounding Toftgate Limekiln, there was lots of green fields dotted with sheep and little pockets of trees aligning the sides of the dry stone walls. But where we are now, we've entered into a much bleaker landscape. The simple line of the outline of the moor just being swept downwards, drawing your view towards even more bleakness beyond. And it's all framed by that sky, which is less blue now and a bit more brooding and grey. I often find this place has a little microclimate of its own, and when it's nice and sunny down in the valley, it can be very much different up here, and maybe a lot more sinister feeling. Having said that, the path is drawing me on as it's leading my eye up towards a really interesting structure at the top of the hill. So I think it's time we put our best foot forward and ventured through these challenging conditions to explore a little bit further, because I'm hoping that what sits at the top of this hill is very much well worth the climb. The hill has kicked up quite steeply now, and as you may be able to tell, I'm searching for my breath. Although I'm not quite sure whether it's the climb that's taken my breath away, or the spectacular views that are starting to open out below me. We're not quite at the top yet, but I'm already thinking that this is going to be quite special. Despite the ferocity of the breeze, all I can hear around me is the sound of skylarks. Skylarks are probably best described in the birding business as little brown jobs. They're quite unassuming birds, but they have a very distinctive tittering call that they belt out as they hover and flicker in the sky above us. You can be next to a busy road or even next to a pneumatic drill going off, but their call always seems to cut through. The sound also reminds me of springtime and summer. Although it's not feeling very much like that today as the cool wind cuts through me. But those sounds of the skylarks is just a reminder that nature is a really powerful and wonderful thing. We're nearly at the top of the hill. Maybe not quite as high as those skylarks are getting, but it still feels pretty high. On my left is a huge sculpture of a bicycle. To give you an idea of how big it is, the tyres are actually made from quarry truck tyres, which, if you've ever been anywhere near a quarry truck, you'll know that they're probably about 7 feet high. The reason that it's here is it's reminding us of when the Tour de France Grand Départ passed up Greenhow Hill from Pateley Bridge back in 2014. I remember seeing pictures on the television at the time of this hill that we're currently climbing up, clad with people with flags, all cheering the cyclists as they approached the summit at the top of the hill. Very brave indeed, especially having another probably 50 or 60 miles to conquer before they hit the finish line. Anyway, just beyond the bike, just ahead of us now, is the start of what is known as Coldstone's Cut, which is a land sculpture. The best way I can describe it is if you looked at it from above, which I know is quite difficult unless you've got a drone, it looks a little bit like a compressed ram's head. You've got two spirals at either side made of stone walls and passageways, and then you've got this channel in between them leading up to a platform overlooking the quarry beyond. Although we can't see it from an aerial perspective, from a ground perspective it also looks rather intriguing. So let's have a wander in and see what else we can find. We've made our way up through the channel of the Coldstone's Cut and popped out at a viewing area over Coldstone's Quarry. From the other side of the hill, you just wouldn't realise that this vast excavation of earth even existed. I'm currently looking down into a bowl into the earth, with layers of rock layered up on top of each other, with little roadways interconnecting them. And just coming up the hill in front of us here is one of those big quarry lorries from which the tyre of that bicycle was made. The wind is really whipping across now. We're really quite exposed at this side of the hill. But it really is, as I said right at the beginning, adding to the atmosphere of this walk today and this incredible place. There's a real contrast in the landscape from this vantage point. As well as having the big bowl of rock in front of us, which you can hardly see to the bottom of, beyond that you've got the rolling hills of the Yorkshire Dales, which are being caressed by the sun as it slices through the clouds. The greens and browns of the land, very much a contrast to the scars that have been made directly in front of us by human hand. The way that this location channels the wind is really quite amazing. At one moment you can be blasted in the face, and the next you can be in perfect shelter, not knowing that the wind was around at all. Where I am here is thankfully one of the latter places. I've made my way to the very centre of the Coalstones Cut, which is marked by this hump all painted in red. Looking down one way, the walls channel your eye across Yorkshire towards the coast. And looking back up the other way towards the quarry, the hill is just met by sky at the top. It really is a good way of channeling your attention in one direction or another. But I'm now going to branch off to my left and head up one of these spiral passageways in between the towering walls of rock that surround them. It's lined by a banister rail hugging one side of the wall, which is leading me around this maze of intrigue. What will we find at the top? The wind is once again whistling around us, because we've made it to the highest point of the Coalstones Cut. In fact, there's a plaque directly underneath my feet that's saying that we're 421 metres above sea level. And it's from here that you get the most spectacular views. Down to my left, I can see Nidderdale snaking up towards the moors at Scarhouse Reservoir, passing down through the town of Pateley Bridge and out underneath Guy's Cliff and York's Folly towards the villages of Summerbridge and Dacre Banks. As I look around in front of the moors ahead of me, I can see the golf ball structures of Menwith Hill RAF Base, and beyond them, far on the horizon, Drax Power Station. A little bit further round, I can see the iconic mast on top of Norrod Edge. And further round from that, another iconic mast of Emly Moor Transmitter. From there, it is just more moorland that hugs the horizon, with the odd wind turbine poking up above it. I bet they're working hard on a day like today. From there, as I look round, I can see the top of Simon's Seat, another location where I've recorded an audio walk. And round from there, above the quarry, we've got the rolling hills of the Yorkshire Dales that I've already mentioned, and the flat top of Great Wernside, arguably the highest point, even higher than this, in the Nidderdale National Landscape area. Looking back across Nidderdale, you can just about make out the outline of the White Horse on the North York Moors. Beyond that, you're heading out towards the North Sea and the beautiful Yorkshire coastline. So it just goes to show that this place is a real centre of North Yorkshire, providing some spectacular vantage points across the whole area. As another quarry lorry, laden with stone, drags its way up the hill behind me and dumps the stone into a hopper, I'm walking around the outskirts of this spiral that we've just wandered up to be greeted by these spectacular views. I'm looking at the compass that surrounds it with places outlined and their distances away. Sydney, believe it or not, is 16,910 kilometres away, whereas the White Horse that I've just outlined is only 42.3. I suppose it puts it all into perspective, really. Anyway, as my hands start to lose feeling because of this brisk cold breeze, I think I'm going to make my way back down the spiral and head back down the hill towards Nidderdale and the valley below. have made it back down to the bottom of the hill. Once again, the sounds of the lapwing and curlew are filling the air as we enter back into the rural farmland away from the rugged and bleak moor. On our walk today, we've visited two different parts of the industrial history of this area. From Toftgate Limekiln, built in the 1860s, to the quarry that is still being utilised to this day. It goes to show that humans' hand will always continue to shape the landscape around us in different ways. But although the Colstones Cut was only erected and opened in 2010, it feels like it's been part of this landscape from the time of the kiln to modern day times of the quarry. It has this unique way of connecting humanity to the land. As long as we live, we're going to take advantage of natural resources to make our lives easier, because that's just how humans work. But at the same time, it goes to show that we can admire and aim to look after what we've got, this natural beauty that surrounds us. And I think by coming here, it makes you realise that it is possible to combine the two, to live sustainably and also make use of what the land offers us. I think it's really interesting to tie this back to the lime that was produced at Toftgate Limekiln, used both for creating mortar to build houses and industrial buildings, but also used to fertilise the land. In times gone by, it was very much about taking with one hand and giving back even more potentially with the other. Today it seems that we take almost too much. So maybe we should look to the past to balance things out a bit. Rewild, but also take advantage of what the wild can bring to us. And that way, we may see a little bit more harmony in the world. It's amazing how philosophical a beautiful landscape like this can make you. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this audio walk today. If you have, then please visit opencountry.org.uk to listen to some more of our audio walks from across this beautiful county of Yorkshire. On the Open Country website, you'll also find out about the services we provide and find out how you can donate as well. I think it's about time that I headed back to my car with my head held high with memories of this amazing audio walk that we've just done today. Thank you very much once again for joining me. I look forward to speaking to you on the next audio walk. Until then, it's bye for now.